Louisiana was one of those areas that over a protracted period was subject to Union incursions. And let me read from a witness describing part of Louisiana in 1864 in an account that highlights the degree to which people had abandoned their farms and plantations to become refugees. This man wrote this way, said, "From Mansfield to the Mississippi River, the track of the spoiler was one scene of desolation. The fine estates on the Cane and Red Rivers were all devastated. Houses, gins, mills, barns, and fences were burned. Negroes all carried off, horses, cattle, hogs, every living thing driven away or killed. You can travel for miles in many portions of Louisiana through a once thickly settled country and not see a man, nor a woman, nor a child, nor a four-footed beast. The farmhouses have been burned, the plantations deserted. A painful melancholy, a death-like silence broods over the land, and desolation reigns supreme." Well, even accounting for a bit of hyperbole here, I think, or factoring in the possibility of a bit of hyperbole there, I think it's clear that a good part of that section of Louisiana had been inhabited by people who believed that becoming refugees was probably the way to go. A number of them undoubtedly ended up in Texas. Many of the refugees found Texas to be quite a shock when they first got there. It was seen as crude and barren and out of the way. But by the end of the war, large numbers of people from Louisiana and Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, and even a few from as far away as Virginia had relocated in Texas. Houston was the major focus of this resettlement. San Antonio, Marshall, Tyler, Waco, these were other towns that accepted refugees in large numbers. A number of those places doubled in size during the war, even tripled in some cases because of the influx of refugees. Most of the planters and small farmers who emigrated to Texas rented land and farmed. They accepted the conditions with fairly good spirits, but others did not. Especially wealthier people sometimes had a hard time adjusting to Texas. One Louisianan complained that Texas, quote, has no society above the grade of Comanches and no school worth sending children to. And one Eastern girl wrote with disgust that Texas ladies smoke cigars, they chew tobacco, they take snuff, and they tilt back on two legs of their chairs. The last one's really, that's too horrible to contemplate, tilting on two legs of your chair. But these kinds of accounts, I think, point up a very interesting way to get at differences of class and differences of region in the Confederacy. People coming in from other places react to Texas, and you can tell that there is not one type of person in the Confederacy. They're all different kinds, and these differences come out in the refugee experience. As I said earlier, there's no precise count of how many refugees there were in the Confederacy, but there were many thousands who lost untold millions of dollars in wealth when they moved. Most of them never regained most of what they lost, and they were some of the biggest losers of the war. They were also among those who held the most bitter memories about the war and nursed grievances against Northerners and the North the longest after the war. All right, let's look at some of the ways in which activities behind the lines in the Confederacy undermined the war effort. Let's begin with opposition to conscription. As the war dragged on through 1863 and into 1864 and onward, many men refused to serve when conscripted in the Confederacy. Most of the patriotic men had gone into the Army early in the war. We've talked about this, that huge rush of volunteering in 61 and into early 62 in both the North and the South put into the armies most of those really fervent patriots on both sides. The men who went into the Army later were often far less willing to go. Now, they might have had a variety of reasons. They might have been supporting families who really needed them, or they may have had doubts about the Confederacy, or there may have been staunch Unionists who really never had any allegiance to the Confederacy whatsoever, or they may just have been afraid of military service. There could have been all kinds of reasons why they didn't go in, but the point is they were far less willing to go than most of the men who had gone early in the war. And it's very important to keep that distinction in mind between the 61-62 wave of men who went into the armies and those who went in later.